still dealing with frogs in my throat. What we're going to do today, for your information, we are going to carry over the work session on Senate Bill 1084 till tomorrow, because there are still amendments being drafted. So if you're here for that, that will not be heard today, but will be tomorrow, members, at 1 o'clock. I believe that will be, unless something unusual happens today, be the only issue we'll have there. So hopefully we'll be able to move through Friday's agenda quickly after we get those amendments. So I'm with that, I'm going to open up an informational hearing on TriMet light rail security activities. And if you remember, colleagues, during the interim, and when we were talking about this issue, and we asked that TriMet return to the regular supplemental special session of the legislature to update us on what procedures they have implemented since our discussion last fall, and what other issues that they may be developing for changes, both in the existing system and proposed additional segments of that system going forward. And so today, Mr. Hansen is here again, and if you would come forward, and if Olivia is going to join you or anyone else, this would be the time to do that, or if you'd have to handle all that while she sits there and gives you support from the back, which she's very good at standing behind you. Oh, there we go.
Apparently she's joining us.
When he's smart, he puts her up front.
Yeah. Welcome.
Would you like to deliver?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Fred Hansen, General Manager of TriMet. Before you is the report to the legislature dated today on light rail safety and security. I do not intend to read it, but I would like to be able to highlight various issues through it and would allow you to be able to continue or to be able to follow along with at least parts of that. I did appear before you on November 13th at your joint interim committee, and let me just go over a couple of things that I think that are important just to give kind of the scale and size of all that. We provide just under 100 million rides per year. That works out on the light rail system. That's on both bus and rail. On the rail side, about one-third of our riders are on the rail side, on the light rail side, and that accounts for, on a daily basis, about a little bit over 100,000 rides per weekday. Drops off some on Saturday and Sunday, but not very much. Overall, in the sense of other systems, if we look at systems our same size or roughly the same size, we are really the eighth highest on a per capita ridership in the nation, and that I think is very significant. Overall, we rank in population size 29 or 26 in size nationwide, and yet 11th in overall ridership, in absolute numbers, that is, not in on a per capita basis. Some of the things around safety and security that obviously are very important is how we design and build things. And we employ what is called CEPTED, Crime Prevention Through Environmental Design. And as attachment to this report are actually the CEPTED principles. And although I will not go through them, it's really to be able to use a multidisciplinary approach to the design to be able to help make those safer systems. This is something that's developed with police throughout the nation. These are not just Oregon standards or TriMet standards. These are national standards. The goal that I set, and I mentioned, I think, when we were here on November 13th, but certainly let me stress again, and that is that for anybody who either rides our system or thinks about riding our system, I want them to feel that the system will be safe, secure, and comfortable to be able to ride. Since the time that I was here, we have held three safety summits. Safety summits in the east in Gresham, on the west side in Hillsborough, and in Clackamas County at the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office. And those dates are there. What came through in each of those safety summits were a number of common themes. First, that the reported crimes on MACs are relatively few, or on our platforms are relatively few, but that the low reported crime rate does not fully capture what's happening on the system. Second, that rowdiness or obnoxious and intimidating behavior on parts of the system, oftentimes not criminal or illegal, but is something that has escalated, is clearly prominent in the evening hours, and can be intimidating, particularly to vulnerable populations, and something that must be addressed and brought under control quickly. Third, fare evasion must be addressed aggressively and effectively. TriMet code allows for the police or our own TriMet officials to ask for proof of payment outside of Fareless Square. And when that is lacking, that is, the proof of payment is not available, they have the authority to be able to ask for ID, and through that ID check to be able to find out if there are other activities that individual's been involved in. Outstanding warrants that oftentimes have led to arrests, outstanding warrants that oftentimes have nothing to do with the transit system at all, but because of that lack of proof of payment that the identification may be asked for. I think it's referred to at times as the broken taillight ability, that is, the asking for proof of payment becomes the ability to engage in that conversation, and if it's not available, to be able to have that ID check and so on. The fourth major theme that came from out of the transit summits, safety summits, was that more official presence must be had on the system, and that official presence must be able to address both that rowdy and obnoxious behavior that is not illegal but is certainly intimidating, plus to be able to address any potential or actual criminal behavior that occurs. Lastly, there were numerous other specific recommendations, and I'll touch upon at least one element of what came out. And we've already taken steps on in terms of one of those additional elements. First off, we did, in terms of actions, a part of the plan that I had announced in early November and amplified on in early December as well and expanded on, was that we wanted to be able to go through each of our platforms, particularly those of the oldest part of the system, that is the system that is from downtown Portland out to Gresham Central, that which came online in 1986, to be able to ensure that we were doing as much as we could to be able to make those platforms meet our current standards. Clearly, they were built at a different time when SEPTED standards were not in place, and that we wanted to be able to enhance those platforms to the greatest degree possible. We have ended up replacing numerous light bulbs to be able to have a higher level of lighting. We've, in fact, installed additional flood lighting at both the Gresham Central Station and at the 82nd Station platform in Portland. We have done a number of other steps to be able to make sure that shrubbery is cut back so that lines of sight and other things are as clear as possible, part of what would be considered SEPTED principles. Next, we recognize that a system that has, for example, graffiti or the broken window syndrome that is oftentimes referred to needs to be able to be removed and removed quickly. The goal we have put in place and have been able to achieve in virtually all times is that graffiti will be removed within 24 hours at all of our MAX platforms as well as our major transit centers. We have, in fact, as I mentioned before, with the SEPTED principles, have looked at how do we really make sure that those sight lines, the ability to have eyes on the street, be able to see clearly into the platforms, and to be able to be a deterrent to criminal or intimidating behavior on those platforms. The east side line presents particular problems because of the nature of at least up to 82nd Street. It is down in that I-84 corridor. It's down next to the railroad tracks. It is accessible through stairs, but is not visible from the roadway. And yet, as we see in the newer designs on our other light rail areas, that we've been able to accomplish much more by having that visibility. But again, we are retrofitting, as I say, lighting, various other things. When we opened the MAX platforms in 1986, I would like to point out that, again, it was a very conscious decision to be able to have light rail be a part of the streetscape. It was consciously chosen to not put it into areas that were isolated from that streetscape. And looking at Pioneer Square in downtown Portland, you can see that those sidewalks that are there, that are really where the platforms are a part of of that actual sidewalk, a part of the Pioneer Square activities, and obviously in that system, the honor system of being able to expect that people are going to have proof of payment and then be potentially having to produce that, but not going through a turnstile or a gated setting such as we see in the systems in subways, whether that be Washington, D.C. or New York City or other places as well. Even Los Angeles, which has a light rail system, some of which is at street level, generally is, in fact, located away from sidewalks. It is in a separately accessible area, and although they have recently announced that they are going to be installing a gated system, their system lends itself to it in a way that ours is much more difficult to be able to do that. The improvements that we have made to the stations and the lines included each new line. We have applied new and more lessons learned from the past, and that included the Max Red Line, the airport alignment that opened in 2001. I'd like to be able to highlight, though, just for a moment, the Yellow Line, which opened in 2004. This line was along Interstate Avenue, and in fact incorporated many of the up-to-date SEPTED standards for alignments, for visibility, transparency, and other things. And we've really seen the results. Even our own Transit Police Division, before the opening of that line, were concerned about what the gang activity that had been prevalent in the north-northeast neighborhoods would they spill over onto that alignment. Obviously, a lot of changes have occurred on that Interstate Avenue corridor, more than what just we brought, although I think we stimulated some of the economic development. But we have found that the numbers in terms of crime, and you will see that in some of the statistics that are attached, are much lower than in other parts, in many other parts of the system, and that design has been a part of what's really delivered on that. We are applying those same lessons to the Green Line, that is the line that is under construction today, moving from Gateway on down along I-205 to Clackamas Town Center, and including light rail being installed from essentially Union Station up to Portland State University on the Transit Mall, 5th and 6th Avenues in downtown Portland. Likewise, we will continue to be able to incorporate those changes as we move forward with the proposed and expected to move forward Milwaukee light rail line. One of those elements are, and I would like to stress this part, is that in many of our platforms in the past, we've had the ticket vending machines right on the platform. It's very convenient. People can buy their tickets there as a part of waiting for the train to come. But what it has prevented is the ability to be able to have that platform, at least when it's not, pardon me, a part of a sidewalk, to be a place where paid fares are required. On the Green Line, along 205, all but one of those stations, and because of the special layout that one station couldn't be, we are having the ticket vending machines set back from the actual platform, thereby allowing that platform to be a paid fare area, allowing the police or our fare inspectors, if people are there, to be able to ask for that proof of payment even on that platform when they're not actually yet on a train or may not be getting onto a train. Also, let me stress that we are, and it's been in close coordination with Mayor Bemis, who is here, I know, on a separate bill that you'll be taking up. But the issue about could we, in fact, harden a platform, make it more like a turnstile type of access. And although that presents a very, I think, challenging issues in a number of areas, we are looking at whether or not Gresham Central and 82nd Street platforms, we can run a pilot in both settings to be able to see what happens and can we actually make it work and be effective. We are in the process of doing the design work on that and would expect that we will move forward with such an experiment, really a pilot, to see how well that works. And I think that's obviously very important. Lastly, let me stress, in terms of some of the physical elements of it, is the closed-circuit televisions. When the West Side Light Rail opened in 1998, we had a total of 9 cameras on platforms in the system. By the fall of 2009, when we opened the Green Line, we will have 525 cameras on platforms or in park and ride areas. Now, there are more than one camera per platform because obviously you want to be able to see the whole of that platform or the park and ride area. Those cameras are in addition to the fact that all of our light rail vehicles are equipped with cameras. You see them on it when those of you who have ridden the system, as well as about two-thirds of our bus fleet. The other one-third of the bus fleet is an older part of our fleet, and we'll really look toward retiring those vehicles and having new vehicles over time replace them that will have cameras on them. But those 525 cameras are in addition to those cameras that are on the system, on the trains themselves. Let me turn a moment then to the actual security fare inspection and so on. Our goal, of course, is that we want to have that, as it came out of the summits, to have more presence on the system. That is achieved in two ways, by making sure that we have a fully manned or fully sourced transit police division, and that is to be able to have all of our positions. And understand, TriMet does not have any of our own police officers. They are all sworn officers from other jurisdictions, the city of Portland principally, but also the city of Gresham, Milwaukee, Beaverton, others have participated in having officers assigned to the Transit Police Division. But as we have faced recruiting problems, as the state police are facing recruiting problems as well, those same jurisdictions that we're asking for officers to be assigned to us have had trouble filling even some of their own slots. But I think we all know how important it is to be able to have this partnership. With the one of the recommendations that came out of the West Side Safety Summit, we will be creating a transit police division precinct in Hillsborough. We're looking to doing the exact same thing in Gresham. We think that by being able to have actual precinct locations in the outlying areas of the transit line will, in fact, allow us to be able to have more presence on the system. And in that process, we are expecting to be able to be fully staffed to our authorized level. I also announced a 10% increase in this current fiscal year to our police force, and those additional officers will likewise be able to be on the system. But equally important is to be able to make sure that the officers we have are actually on the system, riding the trains, on the platforms, oftentimes, as Gresham has done, utilizing bicycles as a way to be able to be mobile and yet still on the system is very important. Our goal is to be able to have officers to be on the system 70% of the time. That is a stretch goal because of the need to be able to, if somebody's arrested, to take them off, to be able to book them, to do all the other sorts of things. But we want to be able to have that physical presence on the system so that when people ride the system, they see a uniform much more often than they have historically. We have also taken steps to be able to, as I say, expand our police force from the current 36 officers. By that 10%, that will move it up to 41 officers. But we also want to make sure that we don't have one-size-fits-all philosophy on how to be able to approach policing the various parts of our system. In the safety summit in Clackamas County, Sheriff Craig Roberts suggested that we might want to have a user board as a way to be able to help determine how best to deploy transit police and other police resources. This is something that's used in gang enforcement and in drug enforcement. That may well make the best sense there. We are also open whether that should be a precinct as well. Those things, I think, are a part of what our commitment is, which is to be able to work with the local jurisdictions in partnership. The statistics that appear on the bottom of page 6 of the report I think, are significant. They're looking at the actual actions taken along the whole alignment by not only transit police officers, by the city of Gresham, by other officers, but they show you the dramatic change that has occurred over the past year, because you see the dates comparing November of 07 to November of 06, same way for December and January. In each of those times, you're seeing that the increases are about 30 to 50% increase in various different enforcement actions. And there are numerous ones. There are warnings, there are fines, and there are exclusions. There are also the fact that when people are found not to have that fare and that ID check is run, they find warrants, again, as I said, oftentimes not relating to transit, but end up in an arrest and removal of that person. We also find that people are, in fact, being taken into custody for other reasons or sent to detox and other things to be able to remove some of that behavior on the system that is particularly frustrating. We also have increased our contracted security. These are our eyes and ears on the system through WAC and HUT. They are able to provide reports of when, in fact, there is a problem, be able to have radio contact, to be able to call the police. They do not have direct enforcement authority, but in our discussions with the police, we're looking at ways to be able to better utilize them, to be able to enhance the presence on the system. They cannot do what a police officer can do, and that we all know, and nothing takes the place of a substitute for those police officers, but they do provide additional presence, can step in and be able to alert the police when there are issues to be addressed. Next, prevention. We have had since the mid-1990s involvement with the Northeast Coalition of Neighborhoods through their rider. What we created was a rider advocate program. These are people from the community who are able to ride the system, oftentimes know many of the individuals who are using our system, particularly young people, and are able to prevent problems, know their families or others who are having responsibility for those individuals, and to be able to intervene. And we think that preventive program is important. We expanded it this past this past December to be able to include an outreach with Victory Outreach, which is a Latino group that's involved in gang prevention and gang intervention, and they now are on board riding the system and, again, trying to prevent problems before they occur. In either case, they do not have enforcement authority, but they do oftentimes know the individuals who are involved and can step in and stop problems from occurring. Let me just do a few last comments and then be open to any questions you would have, and that is about jail time and enforcement actions. I announced in December a zero tolerance for fare evasion on the system. To me, that means that every individual, once we have our ticket vending machines up and operating, because it's pretty hard to be able to hold a person accountable for a not having a fare if they tried and couldn't make the ticket vending machine work. We have some very old machines. They are proprietary in terms of the software that's operating in them, and we can only, in fact, having very real difficulty even getting parts for some of those. We are upgrading those systems. We are doing substantial amounts of preventative maintenance and expect that by March 1 there we will have working machines on all platforms. But one of the things that's been very, very important is that if, in fact, somebody does not have a fare or is acting out, violating the TriMet Code of Conduct, they at minimum get a written warning. That they will, in fact, move to a fine if they have done something either egregious or have been a repeat offender. But for real repeat offenders, we expect them to be excluded from the system. What's important about that exclusion is that if they return during that excluded period, they are criminally trespassing and will, in fact, be arrested. And under Project 57, coordinated through the Portland Police Bureau, but involving the Multnomah County Sheriff and the whole of the area, those individuals will be taken down and arraigned and, in fact, will be held in jail until either a court has reviewed that arrest and release them, they have posted bail, or they actually have been arraigned. And that actual jail time is an effective deterrent, we think, very important. We have also changed TriMet code to allow for an interdiction command. An interdiction command is the ability to be able to have a police officer or one of our fair inspectors, other officials, to order a person off of the system for up to 6 hours. And likewise, if they return within that 6-hour period, they are able to be arrested for criminal trespass. The importance of this was demonstrated in a meeting that I had yesterday in Gresham, where the police officer that has been on, the Gresham police officer who had been on the system enforcing TriMet code and fare, indicated that in a particular disturbance, he was able to order a person off of the train. Although he did it verbally, it meant that that individual had to remove themselves from the train and from the platform. This was not one of the combatants in the conflict that was occurring, as I understood it, but rather somebody who was one of the bystanders, maybe egging people on. And to be able to get them off the system, that officer thought it was very important, and that interdiction command, which has been changed, broadened in terms of the authority or the times in which it can be used, and lengthened from 4 hours to 6 hours, is important. Let me just close by saying that in December I also announced that I wanted to be able to take a broader look at Fairless Square. Fairless Square in downtown Portland was created in the mid-1970s. It was to address a specific air pollution problem, carbon monoxide, had Portland violating air quality standards about a third of the days of the year. It was also in conjunction with a parking lid that helped also address those issues. A lot has changed since then. We do not violate air quality standards in the downtown Portland area for carbon monoxide at all. Obviously, the issues around the parking lid are no longer there either. But we also recognize that that Fairless Square is part of the reputation that this region has, and is something that's written about in travel logs and other things as well. But it also encourages some of the behaviors that we are concerned about, that our police are concerned about. In early December, I announced that we would take a long-term look at that, really over the next 18 months as we were leading up to the opening of the Green Line in September of 2009. Because with the light rail on the transit mall, we have many options that could be addressed. Do we have it only on rail? Is it only on the transit mall? Should it be just as it is now, or other things? I also announced that I would like to see a restriction of hours of Fairless Square between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Much of the public comment that we received on that idea really said, don't do it. But maybe more importantly was that a number of entities that thought we should be looking at Fairless Square didn't want us to address it in a piecemeal fashion, and asked if we would in fact look at the issue of ours as a part of that broader look. I agreed with that and withdrew the proposal to carry that forward, but it will be a part, that is, hours of operation will be a part of the discussion that will occur as we look at the whole of Fairless Square. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hanson. And Olivia, are you there for public support, or do you have any comments you'd like to make?
Yep, no
comments.
Okay.
Well, the first question I would ask, and I appreciate the efforts that your agency has done, TriMet, in addressing these issues, and part of the issue that we'll hear with the upcoming piece of legislation was try to institutionalize that dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
I had a question regarding the new Green Line, is there any environmental design changes being instituted as that is now currently under construction, mm-hmm. as a result of any of your evaluations? And we're talking about some of the retrofits, the pilot program perhaps out in Gresham with hardening the platform. Are you changing the design of any of your stations for the line that is currently under construction?
First off is that the SEPTED principles, the kind of environmental design, are things that we have incorporated and are upgrading, that was prior to the very obviously unfortunate assault on Mr. Chilcote in early November. But one of the things that since then that the design allows us to do that will still be being worked through is we designed that setback of those fare machines, and all but one of those those platforms, partly as a way to be able to have that fair purchasing in a different location. Mm-hmm. But since then, it has allowed us to be able to think, should we really do things such as make clear, in a very clear demarcation, that that platform is fair paying zone only. We'll have to adopt ordinances to accomplish that, do new signage and other things. But it's allowed us to be able to, although we haven't made the final decision, I'm virtually confident that we will be doing that in a way that prior to early November we had not set up. The design has allowed us to do that, but to be able to take the additional steps to allow that to be designated as a fair paid zone is.
So that any of your personnel then under that scenario on those particular platforms will be able to look at that area and be able to interact with any of the individuals there. Clearly that they would have to have been paid to be in that particular area and take appropriate action.
Absolutely. Currently, if you're on a platform, one can wait and see if they are loitering, and that is something that you cannot do. You cannot be there for non-transit purposes. So as several trains go by, you have to wait until that now to be able to engage that individual. In this setting, one would be able to ask for that proof of payment, and if it's not there, then that's a violation, would be a violation. Again, we have to change our ordinances to that, but we will have done that by the opening of the green line.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hansen. Okay, questions from the committee. Senator Monroe.
Thank you. I ride MAX quite a bit, and one of the things that's troubled me over the years is the infrequency of having my fare checked, and that.
And he's somebody you need to check on a regular basis.
We're making note.
And in addition, when I was riding back on the West Line, and they were checking fares, and there were some young people there who didn't have their fare, all they did is booted them off at the next station. And I thought they should have been cited and had a citation written out and been held accountable, not just booted off at the next station where they could sit and wait for the next train to come along and get back on it. So that troubled me, and that's one question I have. Is it your policy now that any time you find somebody on a train that hasn't paid their fare, they get cited and fined? Second question I have is, you have these hundreds of cameras now that are observing. Are those cameras monitored regularly in some way, or are they just producing a tape that could be used in case there's an incident? The other question I had was about Fairless Square, and you've already answered that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senator Monroe. First to your first question, we expect, whether it's our fare inspectors or police officers, to be able to use discretion when they encounter somebody without a fare. We want them to be able to make a judgment. If it's somebody who is from out of the city, didn't understand how to be able to make the fare machine work, or maybe we're having trouble with it, we want them to be able to have discretion, and that may mean, in that case, that's a verbal warning or an educational effort. But we also want them to be able to be very clear that if there is an issue, to be able to, in fact, provide at minimum the written warning. Because what happens with a written warning is that individual's name is entered into the system, and it is available then on a handheld device by any of our fare inspectors or by police to be able to understand that if that person, in fact, again appears, less likely to be a believable story if they, whatever that the excuse they use. And secondly, then, if in fact, though, and oftentimes the police know of chronic problems on the system, if they do not have that and are showing that they have either been excluded previously, they will in fact be able to be arrested, and that is very, very important. But the discretion that's allowed to the individual officers or our fare inspectors is something something we think is very important, and that we do not want to be able to set down a standard that says, doesn't matter what the situation is, you're going to get either a fine or an exclusion. I want to be able to make sure that we also have that written warning as one of the options rather than necessarily going to that additional step. But it has to be used with discretion. The example that you used about some about not having a fare and merely being kicked off, I don't know what the circumstances were, but we do not think that's appropriate. I do not think that's appropriate. I would like to have had, in that case, that those individuals were recorded, entered into the system, so that if they didn't buy the fare, they would be, in fact, enforced. Lastly, let me be clear.
So the person in that instance would have to produce some kind of identification to prove what their name is and their address and so on?
I don't know what happened in this circumstance, but that authority would exist. That is, for our fare inspector or any of our other officials or any police, the ability to be able to ask for the proof of fare. When it's not there, they are legally have the authority to ask for that ID. When they either produce the ID or run the identification, they oftentimes those find those other outstanding warrants that result in the arrest.
Okay.
Second, cameras. We do not actively monitor the cameras in the sense of trying to sense, because there are lots of cameras, and finding has been that it is very difficult to expect that the human eye can stay concentrated in a way that can actually spot those. Now, how we use them actively as opposed to just evidence after the fact is we might find, may get a call about a disturbance on such a platform. If there's a camera there, we can go immediately to that camera, report to the police or others about what's happening, where it's happening, who's involved, and other items, and that oftentimes can help in the actual response to it. But most often it is used as evidence after an event. Now, oftentimes it's used to be able to identify witnesses or others. So it's not just that apprehension of a criminal. That's certainly been very, very valuable.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Starr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here and testifying. Thank you for taking the steps to address this issue.
Thank you.
I do have to say, though, that your first point that you made on page 3, that reported crimes on Macs and platforms are relatively few, I find that utterly unbelievable that you put that in print in ink, because even the list that you provide, I wouldn't say is few, and it is a big problem, and it's a big problem as it relates to the public relations for the agency. And believe you me, the media is printing, reporting when people get beat up on MAX trains or on MAX stations or getting off the train, and it's a really critical issue. And to say that it's relatively few, I think is stretching it. I don't see that at all. But I appreciate the steps that you're taking to address it. Like Senator Monroe, he probably rides the train more than I do. I've got a couple of kids that are on the younger side in elementary age, and I'd love to take my kids on the train to go downtown to join my wife for dinner sometimes. My wife will not let me take the kids on the train, and because it's not safe. At least that's the impression that she has. And I've traveled on the train at night, and believe me that if I were a female, I wouldn't ride on the train at night. The kind of language that you hear and the kinds of insults that are hurled around are not the kind of atmosphere that I think that anybody should be have to endure. The questions that I have are as it relates to who's paying for all of this extra security. Who's paying for the Gresham Police? Who's paying for the City of Hillsborough Police? Is TriMet going to pay for that, or are you going to lay that at the feet of the citizens in Gresham and Hillsborough and Beaverton to pay for that additional police?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Starr, first let me be very clear. What I said on page 3 was that the reported crimes are few, but that does not capture what is happening on the system. And I think the issues that I've stressed is there. The crimes are, on a per 100,000 basis, they are about one per 100,000 riders. And that is relatively few, but I don't mean to debate that issue with you. Let me turn to the issue of the funding of officers. The Transit Police Division within TriMet is 100% paid for by TriMet. And that's not just the officer salary. It is all the equipment, the vehicles, overhead to the jurisdictions who supply those officers. The new West Side Precinct that will be opening hopefully here relatively soon, and it really depends more on how fast officers can be assigned from the Sheriff's Office in Washington County as well as from Hillsborough and from Beaverton, will be 100% paid for by TriMet. The two officers in Gresham that Mayor Bemis assigned have been, in fact, Gresham police officers carried by Gresham. But as we are looking at establishing a transit precinct in Gresham, those would be, as is the case on the west side, would be 100% funded by TriMet, whatever those officers, whatever that number of those officers are.
Thank you. Follow, Mr. Chair. Yes. When you talk about having the ability to boot somebody off the train for 6 hours, how is that enforced? I mean, the fare inspector or the police officer, whoever, says, you're out of here for whatever reason, so he's off at the next stop. How is that enforced? Does the person call ahead on the radio and say, such and such is off the train? How are you able to enforce that?
It depends on how that interdiction command, as we have termed it, is used. If it's a verbal interdiction command, then it would require that same officer to be able to see that same person back on to be able to take an enforcement action. But oftentimes it would be a written interdiction, and then they would be entered in the system, and the same way there would be an exclusion or anything else that would be available for any other police officer. If they came across that person, now they'd have to obviously know them, but if they can't come across that person and that 6 hours has not expired, then that would be in the system, it would be available, and would be able to be taken as an enforcement action.
So the only, Mr. Chair, so the only way that enforce that is if, so the guy gets kicked off on the station, the next train comes by, the guy hops on the train again. As long as he sits there quietly and nobody suspects anything, there's no way to enforce that.
Well, what the interdiction command is intended to do is not to be able to be a permanent removal of an individual. It's really meant, and the police have found it to be very, very important, as well as the district attorneys, and that is that it is used as a way to calm a situation. If there's a series of, as they have described to me, groups of competing young people, maybe not yet fighting, but clearly taunting and getting close to it, the ability to be able to order people off the system, off the platform, to be able to remove them from the tenseness of the situation, they believe has allowed them to calm a situation down, and that it's not intended to be able to be the end-all or be-all to have that person arrested or to be able to be moved out of the system permanently, but it's a tool that they think is very important to calm situations.
Well, I appreciate that, but it doesn't seem to me you have an answer. There's no way to enforce it, actually. I mean, the person kicked off, but you have no way to enforce it. So, that's the answer that I'm hearing. Yeah, okay, it calms the situation that's right there. You tell him he's off for 6 hours, but you have no way of making sure that he doesn't hop on the next train.
Well, I would urge you to talk to the police who think this is very important tool because they do find it important, and maybe I'm not fully describing why they value it such, but they do.
Well, I appreciate, you know, that report. You haven't explained to me how it is that he doesn't get on the next train.
Well, but the issue that it's used for, at least as the police have described it to me, is not whether that individual may get on another train, but rather to be able to calm a particularly tense situation that's occurring at the time and to be able to move them aside.
But you specifically mentioned that your whole program here is to expand the exclusion from 4 hours to 6 hours. And yet, I don't see how that makes any difference. Based on what you just told me, but If the police like it, great. If it helps to calm things, great. But I don't see how it's enforced at all, and that's. I just don't see it. I just don't see how it makes any different. I don't see how it makes any different than the situation that Senator Monroe just talked about, where the fare inspector kicked him off because they didn't have a fare, and the kids jump off and wait for the next train and jump back on.
All I'm saying is, though, in that case, is that that is not what I would expect would normally happen. I would expect that they would get, at minimum, the written exclusion so that if, in fact, they are back on, that they are a written warning so that they have, in fact, been so notified, and that that allows then for it to be a further action to be able to be taken against them if they are there. But I would have thought that normally what happens in that kind of a case is the officer or the fare inspector would actually get off the train with them, ask for their ID, go through that process, and other things.
The I won't continue to monopolize this, but the issue with the fareless square.
Yes.
I'm a legislator that thinks you ought to do away with it. I think that for the tourists that come to town, you can create through the. All of the hotels, you can create passes. I mean, there's ways to deal with some of the issues that make Oregon or make Portland, you know, a cool place to come as a visitor, without providing such easy access to the vagrants and the folks that hop on the train and run across the bridge. I mean, I think there's a lot of things that TriMet can do to slow that down. I'm one that says get rid of the fareless square. Work, use other tools to accomplish, I think, some of the things that the Fareless Square does accomplish. So that's my vote, and I encourage you to look at all those options over the next few months as you go through that process.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Starr, we absolutely will. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Yes. Senator Gary Gerke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noticed under TriMet employees, we now have a new hotline so they can report anything from lights out to a problem, you know, whether on duty or off duty. But do the people that are writing the system have a similar mechanism so that they can participate in the security and improvement of the system?
Yes, they do. We have, Mr. Chairman, Senator George, G. George, I guess I should say, we have a system by which we have our regular line, 238-RIDE is the telephone number, and they can report any and all things. They can report a compliment of somebody they thought did well. They can complain about whatever. They can report the fact that there is graffiti or a light out or anything, and all of those are entered into our database. It's something that I actually read.
Wonderful. A quick follow-up.
Yes.
You also noted that the concessionaires in certain locations are allowed to sell. I think that's a wonderful idea. I think it would work for both parties. How many of the platforms have concessionaires? Because I think they would be important for security also.
They are. More eyes, Mr. Chairman, Senator G. George. We have, I want to get their number right, I believe it's 5 platforms with concessionaires. I'll double check that to be absolutely certain that the concessionaires are there. The fact that they are there are additional eyes and ears on the platform. We think that's very, very important. 2 of those at Gresham Central actually are, in fact, selling the fares. We have also some that are on the west side that likewise are selling fares. So we think that is a benefit. Obviously, if you go over to get your cup of coffee or a newspaper, you can buy that ticket easily as well.
Senator Larger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Fred, thank you very much for coming and addressing us today. And I guess my overall view of this, a lot of this problem is created by the idea that people access the system without paying for it. And what it does is it creates a gateway. I traveled on rail systems all over the world, and almost every system I've been on other than this one has a contained system where you go through a turnstile and you check in and out. You know exactly how many people are coming in, where they've gone, when they've come out. So I got a couple questions, if I could, Mr. Chairman, around that issue. Number one, you reported 100,000 trips per day. How many individuals is that per day? And then how many of those trips are actually paid for? I mean, how many, we actually have fares that I can go to a book, a line item in TriMet's budget and say, that's how many fares came in for that many trips a day. So of the 100,000, how many are actually paid?
Well, first, let me go to your Mr. Chairman, Senator L. George, the number of riders at those 100,000. What we have, just so you understand kind of the logistics of it, we have what are called automatic passenger counters, and they essentially are a complex set of lighting beams that will allow us to count and have proved to be very accurate. That'll tell us how many people have come on, but we can't tell whether it's the same person that's boarded at two different places. We generally use the rule of thumb that we divide in half the number of boardings, thinking that probably most people do two trips. Some do more than that. Some only do one trip. But we use that as a rough estimate. So that 100,000, about 50,000 people we would estimate. In terms of the payment, we do surveys for fare evasion outside of Fareless Square. And our numbers would indicate that about 8% are not paying their fare. Now, is that a number that I would absolutely stand behind? I think it depends more on the location that occurs. Certainly those first stops right outside of Fareless Square, we see more difficulty with. The PGE Park, which technically on the west side is the first spot out, or the first station outside of Fareless Square, my guess is we're well over 8% there. In other areas, probably different.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we can continue. In your testimony, you talk about 50% of TriMet riders either pay or provided passes. So, really, of the 100,000 trips, 50,000 people, there's roughly only 50% of those that are actually paying a fare. Is that how that works?
What they have is a pass, something like what I have,
right.
To be able to ride. And what the thing that I think is important about that is that oftentimes we have people who say, I didn't see that person buy a fare, and yet they got on. For half the people, or slightly over half, they already have a monthly pass or some other yearly pass. That means that they wouldn't be buying that individual fare in any event, and that those fares are paid. The others would be buying individual fares or a weekly pass or some other form of pass for that ride. And then the question is, how often do they actually pay versus not pay?
So if I could kind of just bring this back around to the original question is, if I looked at a line item in TriMet's budget and said, here's what the fares are that come from the light rail system, how many fares would I find have been paid of that 100,000? I know you're saying there's 8% that maybe don't pay, but when you take in the 100,000 trips, what percentage of that is actually a paid fare? I mean, what's my line item in your budget? Where can I go to the budget and find out how many people actually rode? Based on fare.
Our budget may be organized a little bit differently. Maybe let me see, Mr. Chairman, Senator George, if this answers it. We look at all fare revenue as a line item for the budget. Obviously, we have different places that it comes from. That runs just a little bit over $60 million per year from fares across both bus and light rail. Now, we obviously that gets broken down by the types of tickets that are sold, where they're sold. But a ticket that is usable on the bus is also usable on the train. So if somebody is buying a day pass, we wouldn't know whether they had used that for only bus, only rail, or a combination of both. So I'm not sure I could answer directly your question. I'm not sure that we would. In fact, there's no way for us to know in some cases how that fare is actually being used.
One last follow-up, if we could. It seems like to me that what you have with the system, and this is from I ride other systems around, but I'm rarely in the Portland area using the TriMet system. So I can only take my experience from different systems around the world. But it seems like to me the problem is that you have people who can access specifically the light rail that don't pay. Therefore, they can get around for free and get into other people's neighborhoods and then get back home without really any interference. And I guess the question really comes down to when you compare light rail system to the bus system, where you actually have a person who's collecting the fare and actually a TriMet employee who is monitoring, who is on and off, it seems like you'd have a much lower crime rate on the bus service than you would light rail service, and I think the numbers have seemed to appear in it. Why wouldn't, based off of what we're seeing, it seems like the system could almost, at 7 p.m. when the rush hour is over, shut down the rail system and just run express buses to Gresham and these other places where you would have a TriMet person on an express bus going from Gresham into downtown, but you would have a monitor person there and not on this rail system, which clearly gets much more rowdy after 7 p.m. at night. And you see what I'm saying? So how do you get to, I mean, it seems like just a justification of fare recovery, manpower, and everything. It seems like this system, if we're going to keep it where you don't have turnstiles and you don't have a checking system, that you're going to have to move to something where you actually have a TriMet person there, like buses, like express buses.
Chairman and Senator George, the systems that oftentimes have historically been in place, whether it's in this country or in other countries, do have a closed system, one that does have that turnstile. However, in this country, since about the time we began building our system, a number of other systems operate on the honor system as well. San Diego, San Jose, Denver, other places that are more like our system. And still questions are, should we in fact to harden those platforms. The pilot we'll be doing it both at 82nd and in Gresham, I think, will give us some additional information. But I would also like to be able to stress that one of the things that has been a problem, even on our buses, and this goes back possibly to what Senator Starr was raising about Fairless Square, is that a very crowded bus, our bus operator is checking people as they come on. If they say they're in, and we are in Fairless, that they're just going to ride in Fairless, very hard on a crowded bus to keep track of which individual actually had said that they were riding only in Fairless, but now have extended beyond that. So we do have some difficulties, even on the bus side, somewhat compounded by the issue around Fairless Square. But those issues will be wrestled with more broadly. The idea of having an actual individual on the system to be able to check fares, whether they're on the train after 7 p.m. or whatever, is, I think, something that we are expecting that with additional police presence, with additional fare inspection presence, that we can address most of that. It won't be necessarily every train, but that we really want to be able to have more presence. Lastly, I would say, from a security standpoint, we have run missions over the last 2 months on the rail side, where we generally have a bit more rowdiness on the back train of a two-car train consist. We have had 100% coverage from our Wackenhut officers who are there. Now, they are not able to take enforcement actions, but their presence has appeared to be able to calm issues down actually on the trains. Now, that doesn't take the place of a sworn officer who can actually step in, arrest, or take other actions, but we have seen a difference on those trains on Friday and Saturday nights from just even having that official presence available.
Have you thought about the idea of the bus system rather than the rail system running the same routes?
We have. The issue is that capacity on a bus is substantially less than what is on a train. We generally, on a train, two-car train consist, can carry 300 people. On a bus, it's about 45 in terms of the same capacity. It's much more efficient for us to be able to carry large numbers on those main spurs through the train. We have not looked at that specifically. I could explore it, but I think it's going to be difficult to be able to meet our demands.
Final comment is, I guess my point is that when I drive by a TriMet bus after 7 o'clock, there's a lot of people on it during the rush hour, not a lot of people on it at night. It seems like the buses would be a much more secure way to handle some of these and take care of the fare issues and take care of the security issues. And just a suggestion. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sir John.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Mr. Hansen, for your very comprehensive report.
Thank you.
You have focused, and I think rightly so, on the trains themselves.
Yes.
And the buses. In glancing at the report that you provided us, I noticed the number of thefts from vehicles and thefts of vehicles. Mm-hmm. And I would ask you, if you wouldn't mind, to comment a little on what you're doing to keep the park and ride facilities safe, because I think it clearly has an effect on ridership or people's desirability, or the view of the desirability of MAX, if they think they can leave their car in a safe, secure place. Could you tell us a little bit about what you're doing to address that problem? Because in certain areas, like out in Gateway, I was really surprised at those numbers. That's very high.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson. We've done a number of things to do that. First off, we do believe that the prevention is the most important issue, and so we end up having our TriMet personnel patrol those park and rides. And when we see what is really risky behavior, and this is the case whether it's in a shopping center parking lot or others, that it's valuables left in clear visibility or other things that car prowl is encouraged, and we will in fact leave keep notes on the car. We will actually record the license number and be able to send letters to those individuals indicating that they should, in fact, keep those valuables out of sight, if they're either not in the car or out of sight if they are to be left in the car. Secondly, we oftentimes use individuals who are on what we call light duty. That is, they may have suffered a workers' comp injury or other issue. We utilize those individuals to actually patrol those park and rides to be able to make sure that if there's anything going on, there's official presence nearby. Third, we've asked our police officers when, in fact, they are riding the system to be able to park that police car in those park and ride lots. And even though that may not have anybody in that vehicle, the mere visibility of a police vehicle in that lot has helped. Lastly, we do have cameras in those park, or many of those park and ride lots, and are expanding those so that we can, in fact, record when that occurs. But that is, again, prosecution after the fact rather than during. We do find, and I want to be careful on this, is that our park and ride lots, when you compare the amount of break-ins per vehicle parked, are not very different from, and in fact oftentimes less than you will see in shopping centers such as the Lloyd Center or other places. And so, although that's not a very publicized number, we watch that carefully because we want to make sure, are there really spikes in the break-ins in certain lots? When we do see that, we actually take that very aggressive steps to be able to both patrol but also to notify people about how they can take and be safer with their own personal belongings inside their vehicles.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hansen. I know as you continue to work on this and as we get into this aspect of our discussion today with the piece of legislation before us, I understand and appreciate how complex this is, and especially as the system expands, increased ridership, which, of course, is the objective, but there is a multiplication factor of other risks that take place, and trying to address those is not particularly easy. As Senator Johnson pointed out, I appreciate the work that has been done, the public outreach, some very definitive steps, and some well-thought-out processes to maybe evaluate other changes going forward. One thing I would maybe suggest, and I mentioned this to Olivia Clark, I think, about a month ago, and from some of my own personal and professional experience in dealing with security, is that I realize the cost involved, particularly when you talk about, you know, officers and other presence, and not only the tremendous cost that, you know, that could be incurred, but also the feeling of that balance between security and feeling like, you know, you're in some type of lockdown situation every time you're on transit, which no one wants to be either. But one thing to consider is that, you know, you get different trains of thought, and I know if you ask the police, you know, their response generally is we just need more officers. And generally, in all frankness, and all the studies that I've seen and been involved with, that is not the answer. It may be temporarily, but more police doesn't provide more safety at a lot more cost. What is important, though, is that when you're riding those trains, is that folks who are not the do-gooders, that might be that train, is to have the belief, because of the steps that you have taken, that there may be a police officer on there. And I use an example. You don't have armed people on airplanes with uniforms. You know, you don't know that the guy sitting next to you actually is a TSA officer. And that's why it's effective. So in the short term, I think it is prudent, and the steps that have been taken that, you know, Mayor Bemis will hear from and others, to put more armed police presence anyway on, is a very valuable step. But the evolution of that, which is more cost effective, is after you've established that presence, is to have more ununiformed people on those trains in the leather jacket and blue jeans, who then approaches them with a badge and asks for their fare, because if the next train they're not on that individual will have a greater belief that that person may in fact be an officer. So you increase security without necessarily having to incur those types of costs once you have established the expectation that you do have adequate security, and that the person sitting next to them or across the aisle may very well be, because they do show that badge, they do take action, and create that sense of of I better not mess around with this train because I can't tell. That's something just to consider. But I think in the short term, that is important. But as you evolve,
yep.
I think that that can help both on the financial side, but also in the caution side of any of those who may participate in ill will.
Chairman, Olivia had passed that thought along when you had passed it along to her. We do believe that undercover operations are an important part of police functioning. But as you say, it's got to be once we've established that baseline, that presence is available. But we do think that that's a very important part of it. Our new commander, Vince Jarmer, is a 23-year veteran of the Portland Police Bureau, is somebody who I think understands that balance between both that official uniform presence but has to be combined with an ability to not be able to spot just who's there and not then do bad behavior, but to be able to be worried that you might get caught no matter what happens.
Thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
We have another question.
Just a couple of final points. First of all, I can't let you get away with the 8% because I know that that's an aggregate number for bus and train,
mm-hmm.
and that I'm certain that the rate of people not paying on the trains is much higher and on buses is considerably lower because they have a driver there they have to walk by normally. That's one point. The other point is I took a look at the system they have in Boulder, Colorado, which is a university town, and one of the things they've done there to get utilization of the transit system is when you register for school, part of your student fee includes a transit pass. When you get to Portland State next year, I would hope that you would reach some kind of an agreement with Portland State and any other universities or colleges that are along the way. You know, once you get extended out to Mount Hood Community College, then you could do it there as well. And when you get extended to Clackamas Community College, because colleges and universities are very high users of transit service. And we want to encourage that. It cuts down on parking, cuts down on congestion. So if part of their student fee was you get a transit pass, I think that would be a wonderful addition. I tend to concur with my colleague, Senator Starr, that you should take a real serious look at Fairless Square. And if, in fact, you decide to replace it, and I don't mean just abolish it, but replace it, that you look into situations where automatically anybody that comes into town for any kind of a convention or meeting gets a transit pass as a part of their fee that they pay, and that you encourage things. I know in the Lloyd Center business area, for example, they've done an excellent job of a significant percentage of people that work there that have transit passes. Anything that can be done to encourage more and more people that work downtown or that go downtown or that visit our city having passes, I think will help this whole system, and you might find that it's less necessary to have a Fairless Square.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senator Monroe. On your second point, we have committed to the Portland, Oregon Visitors Association that whatever we did with Fairless, we would find a way to be able to address conventioneer and associations. And oftentimes it's easily because they oftentimes have name tags. In fact, mostly do. We can easily find a way to be able to fix a TriMet code so that that can be there. On your first point, I would love to be able to have a universal pass system for each of the colleges, and certainly for Portland State University. We are in discussions with them. Some of the concern has been whether or not they believe they can, in fact, include that as a part of the student fee structure or not. We would love to. We think that's the best way to go by far, and we are very open to be able to accomplish that.
I'm an alumnus. Let me know how I can help.
I will.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Thank you very much, Mr. Hanson, Ms. Clark. We'll close the informational hearing on TriMet Security. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1074. Patrick?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Senate Bill 1074 requires TriMet to perform evaluations of criminal activity occurring on or near the light rail system, of operational safety, and of personal safety and security of light rail passengers. It directs TriMet to report annually to the Legislative Assembly regarding light rail evaluations. It appropriates an, at this time, unspecified amount of money to the Department of Administrative Services for a grant to the City of Gresham to pay for costs of providing law enforcement services on light rail transit vehicles and station areas. This measure includes a sunset date of January 2nd, 2012, and has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Patrick. Hi, I would like Senator Lori Montes Anderson and Mayor Shane Bemis and Captain Tim Birkman to come forward, please.
Thank you, Chair Metzger, members of the committee, and good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to be able to testify on Senate Bill 1074. I'm really pleased to be joined by Gresham Mayor Shane Bemis and Police Captain Tim Gerkman. MACS is really, I think, an important part of our state, and it really is a boon for tourists who travel then with relative ease, and it's also a boon for the economy and allowing shoppers to go easily from one store to another. And I also like it because it's environmentally friendly, traveling from Hillsborough to Portland area to Gresham. But even though the MAC system has been a great success for Oregon, really in the past, just recently in the past year, 2 years, it's really encountered some very major issues that really demand action. And I'm very, very pleased that TriMet has come to the fore. But I also do believe that we need this legislation just because even though the changes are being done, we need to be at least monitoring it to see that the changes that they are making is really going to be making a difference. You've all heard about Lori Chakolte, who was attacked with a baseball bat. You've heard about the stabbings. You've heard about the sexual assaults. And then there are, of course, a number of just misdemeanor-type activities that are happening on MAX, but on the platforms and in the park and rides. When I'm visiting my neighborhood associations, the one thing they want to talk about is TriMet. And I'm so glad that Mayor Bemis has come to the forefront to actually provide officers on the trains, and they will be describing that momentarily. At the Southeast Neighborhood Association that I was at just recently, that's what they wanted to talk about, and they aren't on the MAX line. And they are describing the encounters that they have had. And I said, well, please email specifically what has happened. And I have about a half a dozen emails in my account now, email account, describing the various problems that they have. And I've actually listed one in the testimony that I put before you, and I'd like to just read it to have it on record. And it says, I will not ride the MAX again because it is not safe. On several occasions, I have seen unbelievable actions and been scared to be on it. The last time I rode, a bunch of violent, angry, foul-mouthed young men were hassling everyone, and I feared what might happen. I have seen druggies, drunks, and vagrants, as well as other strange people. I think it's criminal that you, and this is an email that actually they had sent to TriMet, that you continue to hold more MAX lines yet not provide minimal security for the patrons. This really encapsulates a lot of the other emails that have been sent to me, and we really do must act. Senate Bill 1074 is just really a simple measure, and it's, I feel, designed to put us toward greater security on our public transportation system. And the bill has two parts. And the first is going to direct a TriMet to collect data and criminal activity that occurs on or near the MAX stations. And then TriMet will be required to report this information annually to the legislature. And then the second part appropriates funds to the city of Gresham to pay for just 1 year of police coverage. And the city of Gresham deserves a lot of credit for taking the initiative to place police officers on the trains on a trial basis. And as a result, we are really seeing a dramatic decrease in activity, and I will allow the others on either side of me to address that issue. But and I'm emphasizing that this allocation is just a temporary one fix, as the city is already preparing, with strong support from the community, a police safety levy that will be providing MAX security. And I would like you to know that we did allot money for gang prevention, but it was $250,000 less. Gresham is receiving $250,000 less than what we what the budget actually required. Yet Mayor Bemis has taken two officers out of the regular police force to work on this. And so that's why I'm asking for this stopgap until we're able to provide, get our police safety levy passed. Thank you for the opportunity to address this vital issue, and I'd like to turn it over to my counterparts here.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator, just before we go to the other testimony, Senator, I might have just not heard you when you said it. How much money is the cost of the officers?
It will be $200,000.
Thank you. I just didn't hear you.
For two officers, that includes all their equipment, bikes.
Mayor Bemis, welcome.
Chairman Metzger, members of the Senate Transportation Committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify before you again today on an issue that we think is so critically important to all of our constituents. Excuse me. When I spoke before your committee last November, I reported our statistics on a very troubling relationship between light rail and the crime statistics that we had in the city of Gresham. We learned that 84% of our gang calls, 41% of our drug cases, 40% of our fight calls, and 40% of our robbery cases in the entire city happened within a quarter mile of light rail platform. While we believe that law enforcement is the responsibility of TriMet, it came to a point where we had to take the situation into our own hands. At that point, we placed our own officers onto the line. As Senator, as you have indicated, we've ran many undercover as well as the uniformed officers and find that they both work quite effectively. I want to share with you some of the statistics that we have been able to come up with in just the last 3 months that we've been able to do this. We've made contact with 5,450 riders. We've made 33 felony arrests. We've made 101 misdemeanor arrests. And we've excluded 570 fare evaders who are trying to take free rides on the train. These numbers are giving us great optimism that once we get a fully dedicated precinct and we have appropriate staffing, that we're able to bring these numbers down and get the line safe again so that the senator can meet his wife downtown and we can take my small children to the zoo from Max, you know, without feeling that it's not safe. However, in the interim, the enforcement action that we're conducting puts substantial stress, as you can imagine, on an already constrained budget. The vast majority of our property tax rates are already applied to public safety, fire, and police. So I'm here to ask for your support of Senate Bill 1074. It would greatly help us continue to work with TriMet in the short term as we get to this long-term picture of a precinct for the east side. We did meet yesterday with Fred Hansen and the security staff with TriMet and our police department. We have requested 10 officers for an east side precinct. What the law enforcement personnel are telling us that is the very minimum that they think that they can actually start to make a difference. And I think if you look at the numbers and the statistics that we were able to provide to you with just two officers, there's a whole heck of a lot of work on that line, and I think we can get control of it if we have the proper resources to it. I can tell you, as Senator Moss Anderson, I'd like to thank her for bringing the bill forward. This has been, in my 7 years being involved in elected office at the city, this is probably the most has risen to the highest level. We have email after email after email after email, and neighborhood association, anywhere I go, the grocery store, it's all about Max, and it's all about the perception. And some of it is just perception, but there is a big problem, and it's going to take all of us working together to get this line safe again, and I'm not sure that we're there yet. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and as I mentioned in November, thank you for your leadership on the city. Senator Johnson.
Mr. Mayor, going back to your testimony that you just delivered, when you talked about the fact that we firmly believe that law enforcement is, for Max, is TriMet's responsibility, your citizens couldn't wait any longer to see tangible progress. Had there been negotiations that failed, or is there a disagreement between the city and TriMet about the number of officers needed or the deployment of officers? I'm just trying to figure out. I think this is a community problem, not a TriMet problem or a Gresham problem. It's something that we all, I think, have to try to participate in a thoughtful resolution, but I'm just trying to get a little of the background.
Sure. Senator Metzger, Senator Johnson, thank you for the question. We have, as Fred Hansen has said, we are our officers. They have no police officers. They are our officers that go to the TriMet pool. So there is communication from our chief to the incident commander chief of TriMet. There is that constant communication that's going on. But I really don't want to rehash how we got there other than to say that I think TriMet has moved more to a proactive approach today than they were prior.
Thank you.
Chair Metzger, Senator Johnson, I would like to just follow up on that. Public relations, I think, really needs to be beefed up at the TriMet level also, because, again, as Mayor Bemis said, perception is a lot of this also. And the fact that some people really feel that TriMet is arrogant and not addressing their problems, that is a perception that many of the public, at least in my district, have, and I have emails and people to attest to that.
Thank you, Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator and I worked on an issue this last year having to do with tax base for those of us who have high residential populations. Mm-hmm. And clearly, as part of the light rail system, was a land use plan where we would put residential in a certain area and use light rail to get there. And I know for some of the city, at least one of the cities in my community where we have a high distribution of residential, the tax base is lower. Mm-hmm. And so even though this is a regional issue, certain cities are being asked to pay for the burden of what really is a regional problem. And I just, if I could, get both of you to talk a little bit about the impact on your tax base as all the commercial taxes are being paid in downtown Portland or other places, but you guys are doing the expenditures for the public safety side. If you could talk about that a little bit, I'd appreciate it.
I just want to state that Gresham has the lowest tax base for a large city in the state of Oregon, and over 90% of our budget goes to police and fire. With that point, plus now that Portland has done a lot of revamping of some of their low-income housing, we are seeing a huge, huge increase in gangs and low-income and poverty into our area. And then I'll let Mayor Bemis follow up.
Thank you, Senator Metzger. Senator George, we have a huge investment in the MAX line, meaning we have our award-winning regional center at Gresham Station. We have one of our the most problematic stops is the only stop into our historic downtown, which we have is going under revitalization. It's really starting to take an urban form. So that commercial tax base we're hoping to gain with this, with you know, some of the expansion that's happening around the light rail. I don't want you to take my comments as anti-MAX. I think they are in no way meant to be that way. We believe that that MAX is a huge amenity, and we have, again, a lot invested. It's just we want to be safe.
Captain.
Chairman Metzger and members of the committee, thank you again for allowing us to come down here and testify before you. We have our police department's, I'm sorry, I'm Captain Tim Garkman with the Gresham Police Department. Our police department has for a number of years been involved in the transit division run out of the Portland Police Bureau that deals with TriMet policing issues. Currently we have two officers and a supervisor, a sergeant assigned to that unit. That's in addition to the two positions that we have funded that are working MAX problems within the city limits of Gresham. As Mayor Bemis mentioned earlier, during the 3 months that we have had that unit in existence, we have made 5,450 contacts. The 134 total arrests, both those numbers are an incredible amount of numbers and show the dedication and commitment that these officers have that are assigned to this unit. Some of the stories that I've heard from them that I'd like to relate to you are along these lines. One night when they first started working this mission, it was toward the end of their shift. They were tired. They're averaging somewhere around the area of 3 arrests per night per working shift. They were tired. They boarded one of the trains and asked everybody on board, if you don't have a ticket, raise your hand. Just make it easy on us. And about 75% of the riders on that train raised their hands. And at the next stop, they asked everybody to step off. I hear stories about them making an arrest on a train. They asked for a district car to meet him at the next stop. They asked that district car to transport that suspect back to the Gresham Police Department. While they ride the train back to the City Hall station, they encounter more people that require police attention, and that results in even more arrests. So instead of having one prisoner to process and transport, they now have two or three or sometimes even four at the same time. They relay to me how often citizens contact them and express their gratitude. And one thing that we cannot measure, other than in the comments that I receive, in addition to the emails that the mayor's office receives, I receive emails and telephone calls, is the appreciation that our citizens, not only our residents, but our visitors into Gresham, the appreciation that they express for the enhanced safety and security that they feel on a daily basis. And again, these numbers that we generate are primarily the work of two officers working a 10-hour day. There have been a couple of overtime missions associated to this. On occasion, when our day shift patrol staff is staffed above minimum field strength, we'll assign two officers to the train. But generally, this is the work of two officers who have accomplished this enormous task. And already there's a substantial increase in the perception of safety that the riders feel. On a personal note, it was Tuesday night. I had a meeting I needed to attend in downtown Portland. It started at about 6 o'clock that night, and I made a comment to a few people at work that I'm going to ride Max down. I wasn't going down armed. I wasn't going down in uniform. I was wearing jeans and a jacket. Looked like any other citizen riding the train. A few people questioned my sanity. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to experience what it was going to be like to ride Max at 5 o'clock at night from Gresham and come back about 9 or 10 o'clock at night from Portland. Coincidentally, I happened to board a train at Gresham City Hall, and it was the same train that our officers got on. So I actually got to see them work for the first time in engaging riders of the MAX train. And I'll tell you that their interaction pleased me. It was very professional. It was very polite. They dealt appropriately with the people that I felt needed to be dealt with. The first one that they encountered was somebody without a fare. They were very polite and professional to this rider. They asked the gentleman to step off, and at that point he was excluded. And that was my last contact with them for the entire evening. So again, there's no way to identify the perception of increased safety, but I can tell you that our citizens comment on it all the time. I've lived in Gresham for 22 years now. I have a lot of contacts in there through outside activities that I'm involved in, through baseball, Little League, things like that. So I know a number of people that live in Gresham, and it is a topic. When I see people at the store, when I see people, you know, in restaurants, they want to talk about Max and continually thanking us for the effort that we're putting forth. Again, you can see what the work of two people do. Imagine if we had a force of 10 and a supervisor working on the east side. Within a year, I can tell you the east side, east of I-205, will be a completely different picture. One thing that I've emphasized, that I've stated from the beginning, is that the men and women assigned to the police bureau, the transit division of the police bureau, work very hard. Okay, this is not a reflection of the work of the law enforcement assigned to the transit division. To me, it's a result of underfunding of law enforcement. When you have, on a day shift, when you have one officer assigned to the east side, and the interpretation of east side is east of the Willamette River, and they're responsible for the entire MAX line, I don't know how these officers do what they do. Without readily available cover, I wouldn't encourage any officer to get on MAX and ride MAX alone, checking fares, encountering the type of ridership that we encounter on occasion. So to have one officer assigned west of the Willamette River all the way to the end of Gresham just isn't working. Okay, those officers do work hard every day, day in and day out, doing what they can, but it's just it's a result of underfunding for law enforcement. Again, I want to thank you for allowing us to come down and provide this testimony to you.
Thank you, Captain Gerkman. I have a question. You gave a few examples, but in the 3 months, you actually made 33 felony arrests with just those two officers. Would you maybe give me a bit more detail of what those arrests were? Were it because they were on warrant for previous felonies, or was it felony activity? And just maybe a more ideas what some of those felony arrests were for.
Well, some of them were for drug arrests. For instance, we put undercover officers, sometimes from our gang unit, sometimes from what we call our neighborhood crimes response team. They're plainclothes officers that will ride the train. They've actually witnessed hand-to-hand drug exchanges on the trains, on the platforms. So some of those arrests are a result of that. Are we seeing an abundance of felony crimes committed in the presence of our officers? We're not. But when we encounter the rider that doesn't have a fare, it gives us an opportunity to ask more questions. Their name, their birthday, where they live, what are you doing? We get them off the train, and as we run them, we'll come up with warrants. Recently, a team working during day shift hours came up with somebody that was on a parole violation for a homicide charge, and it simply resulted out of a no fair contact. So those are the types of people. Frankly, what surprised us is that we expected to run into a number of people with weapons. We haven't encountered as many as we anticipated originally. I can tell you when the events around 162nd and Burnside erupted toward the end of summer, where we saturated the area with patrol officers, I was down there on the first day. We did encounter somebody that was stepping onto the platform, intending to ride the MAX train, that had a machete stuffed down the front of his pants, down at the leg of his jeans, and he was carrying that for quote-unquote protection, right in the train system.
Thank you very much. Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Relative to that question, you said you didn't carry when you went downtown. You had one experience. Would you think it was reasonable to take a gun with you the next time if you or regularly if you had to ride? I mean, seriously, I'm serious about this. Because here's the thing. You remember the guy that was the great tennis player who was trying to sell us a camera, and he was telling us that image is everything? And I'm going to tell you what, if we don't get the image of this thing up, we're going to see ridership plummet. And because of that question, did you feel safe, and did you wish you had were carrying?
Mr. Chairman, Senator George, I rarely carry a weapon off duty. Generally, the rule of thumb is that if I'm riding MAX, I will. I'll bring a holster, I'll bring a gun. I couldn't that night because of the location I was going to. I couldn't carry a gun, even as a sworn police officer. So do I wish I could have? I do, because I feel more comfortable riding the train system armed. That night, I wasn't able to do so.
Thank you for your honesty.
The answer to the trivia question is Andre Agassi.
Senator Johnson. Thank you. Captain, you talked about the character of your ride into town. 9 o'clock that night coming home, what was the character of the ride?
He was. Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, the train trip home was uneventful, although I felt like had I been in uniform, there were several people on the train that I would have liked to have had a chat with just to get to know them. It was a little bit loud at times, but not necessarily because they were engaged in unlawful behavior. They were just people that, based on my training experience, it would be a good idea to go up and say, hi, what's going on, how are things tonight?
Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Captain, I guess one of the questions I have is, and I'm trying to understand how it works. You were talking about day patrols, and I know that you have an increase. Most of the ridership comes on during rush hour traffic, and then at night the trains are much more empty. Do you see the crime during the days when there's lots of people on it, or is it in the evenings when there's low ridership volumes? And when are you seeing the criminals using the system, and when are you seeing people most nervous? I mean, what I hear anecdotally is people don't want to ride at night. But I'm trying to get an idea of when you're running the patrols and when you're actually doing the most arrests, and when do you find most of the problems?
Mr. Chairman, Senator George, if I told you when we were running the patrols, that would be a clue to the people we don't want to know.
When's the perception of most of the problems?
Actually, probably on 10 to 12 occasions in this three-month period, we've had an opportunity to assign day shift officers to the train. Their shift starts at 7 a.m., and this is above and beyond the two officers we've assigned normally to do this. They are experiencing the same thing, 2 to 3 arrests during their shift. Exclusions, citations, things like that. So we're seeing a criminal element, and by that I mean they might not be conducting or committing crimes on the system, but they've committed crimes as part of their normal behavior. Therefore, they have warrants, or they might have been excluded previously by their officers on the system. We're seeing them essentially from 8, 9 o'clock in the morning until midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. A lot of our crimes that have been committed or high-profile crimes have been early evening hours to, you know, 8, 9 o'clock in the evening. But, yes, it's during the nighttime hours when people feel more uncomfortable because sometimes there are only 10 or 20 people on the train at a time. That's when our youth or our young adult might be on the train. As Mr. Hansen said, maybe not committing unlawful or illegal behavior, but behavior that makes us all feel uncomfortable, that the livability issues, the quality of life issues. So it's more of the higher profile times would be sometime between noon and midnight, I would say.
Senator Starr, then back to Senator Johnson.
Thank you. How far east are your officers riding the trains? Or how far west, I'm sorry, west?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Starr, we strictly have kept our officers within Gresham, which is 162nd, east to the Cleveland station. It's 8 stops.
Thank you.
Thank you. Based on your professional observations and as a citizen of Gresham, do you think with saturation public safety patrols that the line can be redeemed and people can feel safe again? I'd invite comments from any one of the three of you.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, I absolutely believe so. And do I think law enforcement alone is the answer? I don't believe law enforcement alone is the answer. Of course, we need, when our riders are committing crimes, that we need the prosecutors, we need the judges, we need the jail space. But do I think law enforcement can provide a deterrence, increase the perception of livability, work on those quality of life issues that make you and I uncomfortable when we're riding the system? Absolutely. If we had more law enforcement, absolutely.
Chair, Senator Johnson, and I would agree. I ride MACs, and I have never felt unsafe, but I only ride during the day, and it's primarily when I ride, it's when I'm going to the airport. It's just so convenient for me to take MACs to the airport rather than dealing with all of what you have to do to go to the airport.
Chair Metzger, Senator Johnson, the good news is you're right. I think we can get this back, and I think you can see just from the sheer numbers we've been able to produce having two officers, it's starting to take shape. And I was coming back from lunch the other day at Gresham Station, coming across our City Hall platform, and there were some younger folks sitting on a park bench, you know, waiting to get on to the MAX, and, "Hey, dude, do you have $2 I can borrow for a fare?"
That would be Mayor Dude.
Yeah, I know. I get that sometimes, too. But the point is that that has never happened because there has been, you know, fareless system of sorts, and people have not been buying fares. So the change is starting to take effect with just a minimal amount of effort. And, again, this is a great amenity that we can get back. We've just got to figure out how to make it safe.
Right. Senator Monroe.
Just some final comments. I really believe that the ultimate solution is to make it so that anybody that doesn't have a legal fare gets caught. I mean, virtually 100%. And that's going to take, obviously, some additional staffing and so on. And then when we get the system safer, we're going to have a big job to do to change the perception of people. Mm-hmm. And so I would hope that you're working with Robin Franson of the Oregonian or other individuals, reporters out in your area, to get them to maybe do some stories about how much improved things are and how much safer things are. Because it's taken quite a while for people to be fearful of using the system. It's going to take just as long for us to allay those fears and to, again, change the perception of people so that they understand that the system is, in fact, safe. And the other comment I would make is that is the comment about whose responsibility it is. You talked about all the numbers of crimes that occurred within a quarter of a mile of MAX stops. Okay, if somebody commits a crime two blocks away from a MAX stop, is that TriMet's responsibility or is it your responsibility? And the answer is it's society's responsibility. It's all of our responsibility. I think it would be unfair to blame TriMet for every crime that occurs within a quarter of a mile of every MAX stop.
Senator, Chair Metzger, Senator Monroe, and that was not my intent to blame them. We're just simply pointing out the relationship between crime and the light rail for, you know, a 22 square mile city of 100,000 people. We have tried not to, dump this all on TriMet. All we have said is keep your line safe. We're going to make investments on our 162nd patrols and our saturations. We're going to ask the public to pay a third more property taxes this next year, a $6 million police levy to make substantial investments into keeping the community safe. We've owned our piece of our societal changes in Gresham, but we think the TriMet needs to own the piece of the enforcement of the MAX.
Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You probably don't have the numbers, so a piece of information that would be helpful is as you do an arrest to find out how many of the people are actually Gresham residents or people perhaps the system is bringing into Gresham. And that would be an interesting piece of information for us to know how that's working.
Mr. Chairman, Senator George, we do have that information. We just didn't break down our information that detailed. But when we make contacts with our citizens that are riding the train, whether it's a good contact or a bad contact, we ask that they provide that information. Not everybody does, but But we have that information pretty detailed. So I can get copies of that and then get that routed down here to you.
I think for communities like Hillsborough and Gresham that are seeing these increases of crime around their stations, it'd be interesting to find out whether or not it's the system's actually importing people in to do crimes there that then leave. So the system is actually importing people. And I guess that would be very helpful piece of information as we're doing some of the policy stuff.
Well, a story, we have a Skate World in downtown Gresham, just within blocks of a light rail station. And a couple summers ago when I was working, I happened to come out at night to spend some time with patrol officers with the shift. And we encountered a very serious riot at Skate World. Probably 90% of the people there, maybe upwards of 95%, at 2 o'clock in the morning, it was a 24-hour skate party or an all-night skate party, were not Gresham residents. What we did is we ended up essentially herding them, closing down Division Street, blocking traffic with police cars, and herding them back to the MAX platform and sending them back on a train into Portland. Recently, we've encountered big fights at Skate World. Other businesses, local businesses, were impacted by the fights. Fights were breaking out in their establishments as these kids left Skate World. And once again, most of these kids were riding light rail from Portland. They were coming from north and northeast Portland. The last time that we heard that this event was about to take place, they're doing, I believe it's called this flash mobbing via their text messaging, where they text all their friends contact their friends, and pretty soon we have large groups headed out to Gresham on light rail. We contacted the transit division, who stopped the train at the 82nd platform, asked for fares, ended up kicking off a substantial number of these kids and routing them back home into Portland. So, yes, we are impacted by light rail, and it's not just Gresham residents.
Well, thank you very much. And back to Senator Monroe's comment, and I know sometimes it isn't as sexy, but it's just as important, and it can be more difficult to get out. But the communications part of when the good things that are happening, steps that are taking, again, it's not as good as the bleeding headline. I know that from experience. But it also is a very valuable story, and told correctly, does generate a lot of interest. I mean, people want to know what's been done and to feel confident that the efforts are turning a tide, that they have a right to feel safe and are going to feel safer. And part of that confidence factor does come a lot from, you know, effective communications of the changes. So it's a balance between, you know, addressing the issues, which creates concern, but also addressing the successes and the changes so that people feel more comfortable. And as they feel more comfortable, they often feel more emboldened to help continue to make it more comfortable. It's just kind of it's like the economy. You know, if you think you're in a recession, then we probably get into a recession, and it's I think the same way with safety. Public perception is very important. Thank you all very, very much. Now, I have no one else set to testify on Senate Bill 1074. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on Senate Bill 1074?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Sharp.
I'd like to know where TriMet stands on Senate Bill 1074.
Chairman, again, for the record, Fred Hansen, General Manager. We are supportive of this. We would, this is the type of information we would be collecting in any event, and to be able to have the formal ability to report to you, we're supportive of. We can't obviously speak to the general fund piece of it, but the reporting side, we're very supportive of.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. If not, and this has a subsequent to Ways and Means because of the appropriation for the City of Gresham, I'm going to close public hearing and open. Do we have amendments at all?
Oh, yes, Mr. Chair.
I think we do.
The dash one amendments that you have in your packets, I believe, simply add an emergency clause to the measure.
Okay. So, we're in work session. Yes, Senator Starr.
Move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 1074.
All right, Senator Starr has moved the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 1074. Any discussion on the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? So ordered.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
I move the Senate Bill 1074 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 1074 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation, perhaps?
With a due pass.
With a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Starr.
Now, I recognize this specifically identifies the City of Gresham for a grant. Would there be any desire or any opportunity for other cities that have light rail along their line to could be in line for grant opportunities as well? Obviously, with this language, it wouldn't be that way, but it might be something that, you know, I would talk to my city about, City of Hillsborough, about if there's opportunities. I don't know if you want to. You don't have to. And it would be something that we could talk about in Ways and Means. I understand the city of Gresham has stepped up to the plate and expended city resources, so.
Chair and Senator Star, Lori Monis Anderson, Senator from Gresham, Troutdale, Village, and Fairview. I thought long and hard about that, and then we thought, well, should it go to TriMet? Should it go to another entity? But on the west side, they have made actually further progress with the number of officers, and this is for a one-time stopgap. And so we decided to narrow it to Gresham, especially since the funding for our gang prevention program was decreased by $250,000. It just made sense.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Senator Starr.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Betts.
Senator, while you're still there, I presume that the appropriation, if this bill successfully moves through the entire session and is signed by the governor, that the appropriation would be specifically for law enforcement.
Yes.
And administrative costs are not going to be taken out of this. This is feet on the street.
This is two officers, absolutely, and their equipment. Yes.
Okay. So we have the motion to advance the bill to Ways and Means. Is there any objection to that motion? If not, so ordered. Colleagues, so tomorrow we will meet at 1 o'clock to hear Senate Bill 1084, and once we have done what we shall with 1084, hopefully we will have a short meeting and be able to move home. So that will adjourn.
Do you have
a few minutes for 1084? I have one written, and...